Chapter 18, Section 1, All Change Please. In early 2009, I met Liam Maxwell. That name might not mean much to you unless you work in government, but he has been an influential figure in government technology throughout the world, a strong advocate of mapping and a good friend since that first encounter. We met when I was speaking at some random conference in London on evolution and technology. By happenstance, Liam was in the audience. We got chatting and discovered we had common interests and ways of thinking about technology. I was soon invited to the Triple Helix group, which consisted of a motley crew of interesting people: Jerry Fishenden, Mark Thompson and others. They wanted to try and help fix problems they saw in government IT. It was a non-partisan group, i.e. many of us came from different political backgrounds. For myself, I felt completely out of my depth. This was big IT, as in huge projects with hundreds of millions spent on massive scale systems that I had usually only heard about because of some failure hitting the mainstream press. There were also big personalities. I met Francis Maude. He was in the opposition cabinet at the time, which mainly consisted of me trying not to mumble "you're Francis Maude," given I was a bit awestruck. What on earth was I, a state school kid who'd lived on a council estate, doing in the Houses of Parliament talking to people I'd seen on TV? I was also introduced to various departments, who kindly offered to give me an hour or so explaining how big IT happened. What I saw shook me, but then I hadn't really seen big IT in the commercial world, having mainly built companies or worked for moderate-sized groups. The first, and most obvious thing, I noted was the lack of engineering skills despite the scale of these engineering projects. I would be introduced to engineer after engineer that in effect turned out to be a glorified project manager. The answer to everything seemed to be outsource it, a mantra that had been encouraged by hordes of management consultants. I tried to explain how this would inevitably lead to cost overruns because some components would be novel, but usually got an answer blaming poor specification. It seemed that no matter how many times a project failed, the answer was better specification or better outsourcing. This was dogma run wild. I became increasingly aware that these groups were not only dependent upon the vendors, but many lacked the skills necessary to challenge the quotations given. There was no concept of maps and no effective mechanism of communication, learning or sharing. Everything was isolated. Duplication was rife. Before anyone goes on about how bad government is, let me be clear that this pales into insignificance compared to the inefficiencies and ineffectiveness of the private sector. I might have seen the same system rebuilt 100 times in government, but in the commercial world, I've seen 350 separate teams of people rebuilding the same IT project in one organization at the same time. Anything that the government gets wrong, the private sector excels at showing how much more wrong is possible. Anyway, government was still a shock. There were some weak measures of cost control, but barely any concept of price per user or transaction or user needs or anything that I had started to take for granted. There was one project that Liam asked me to guess the price on. I responded around £300,000 after looking through the details. It was north of £50 million. I had real trouble wrapping my head around such figures, but then I've seen $1 billion spent on no hope, obviously doomed to fail from the beginning efforts in the private sector. I'd always assumed there was some greater wisdom that I wasn't aware of. It was becoming clear that this wasn't the case. In government, however, this tended to make me annoyed. I don't mind survival of the least incompetent in the private sector, because eventually someone will come along and do a better job. In government, there is no someone, and getting things right is critical. I have family that live in social housing who would be horrified at the waste. In between plotting Ubuntu's dominance of cloud, I started to spend my spare time working with this group on writing the Better for Less paper. It had rapidly become clear that not only did government spend huge sums on individual projects, but that those projects had deplorable rates of success. Only 30% of government IT projects succeed, says CIO Shouts, the May 2007 edition of Computer Weekly. How was it possible for projects to spend such inflated sums and fail so frequently? The more I looked, the more I uncovered. This wasn't a problem of civil servants and a lack of passion to do the right thing, but instead a cultural issue, a desire to not be seen to fail, which inevitably ended up in failure. The skills had been outsourced to the point that outsourcing was the only option with few left that could effectively mount a challenge. There was a severe lack of transparency. Getting the IT spend in government to the nearest billion was nigh on impossible. The words "how can you not know this" seemed to constantly trip from my tongue. Shock had become flabbergasted. Of course, the reasons why we were building things often seemed even more ludicrous. Most of the systems were being designed badly to fit legislation and policy that had barely considered their own operational impact. Any concepts of what users, i.e. citizens, might want from this was far removed. Interaction with citizens felt more of an inconvenience to achieving the policy. You should remember that I had spent 5 years running online services for millions of users. This policy-driven approach to building IT was the antithesis of everything I had done. To compound it all, the silo approach or departmentalism of projects had meant that groups didn't even talk with each other. Whitehall had somehow developed an approach of creating and maintaining expensive, often duplicated IT resources that often failed but also didn't interact with each other in effective ways. In 2003, I was used to web services providing discrete component services that were consumed by many other services. In 2005, I was used to mapping out environments with clear understanding of user needs, components involved and the potential for sharing. In 2010, whilst sitting in one of these department meetings, flabbergast became horror. I was looking at approaches that I hadn't seen since the mid-90s and discussing policy issues with people that lacked the skill to make rational choices. Where skill did exist, the government had bizarre stratifications of hierarchy which often meant the people who could make the right choices were far removed from the people making the choices. Big IT just seemed to be a euphemism for snafu, and it was only big in terms of cost, lack of solid management information and failure rates. When it came to the number of users served and performance, it was decidedly average, verging on small. With Fatango, we had dealt with millions of users from our warehouse space in the technology desert, at that time, of Old Street. We used an open plan environment which brings its own problems. We used hack days, scrum meetings and town halls to counter communication difficulties. Despite our best efforts, our use of small teams and our small size, it was inevitable that the layers of hierarchy and politics would impact communication. However, the scale of our communication issues was trivial compared to entrenched structures, politics and communication failures within these departments. The scale of the problems was big even if the IT wasn't. The Triple Helix group needed to start somewhere, so we started with a basic set of principles. Doctrine: think big. We need to get out of the mindset of thinking about specific systems and tackle the whole problem. We needed to break away from these isolated individual systems. We needed to change the default delivery mechanism for public services towards online services using automated processes for most citizens. We needed an approach that focused relentlessly on delivery to the citizen and their needs. This was going to be the big idea. Doctrine: do better with less. Such an approach had to be transparent and measured in terms of cost. It had to provide challenge for what was currently being built. From this, we developed the idea of a scrutiny board, which later became Spend Control under Octo. It wasn't enough to simply reduce spending, our focus was on dramatically reducing waste whilst improving public services. We couldn't do this without measurement. We understood that this would not be a big bang approach but an iterative process, a constant cycle of doing better with less. To this end, we proposed the use of open data with a focus on the government becoming more transparent. We also added the use of open source, including the practices associated with it, and the use of open standards to drive competitive markets. Doctrine: move fast. We understood that there would be inertia to the changes we were proposing and that existing culture and structures could well rise to combat us. We put in place an initial concept of work streams that targeted different areas. The idea was that if we ever put this in place, then we'd have 100 days or so to make the changes before resistance overwhelmed us. If it wasn't up and running in that time, then we would have missed our window. Doctrine: commit to the direction, be adaptive along the path. To enable the change, we needed a clear and effective message from authority combined with a commitment to change. However, in the past this has been notoriously difficult, as only one minister in the Cabinet Office, Tom Watson MP, prior to 2010 had any real commitment to understanding technology. However, with a change of government there might be an opportunity with a new ministerial team. To support of all this, we proposed a structure based upon the Innovate Leverage Commodities model. The structure included innovation funds operating at local levels, a scrutiny board encouraging challenge along with a common technology service providing industrialized components. The structure was based upon concepts of open, it was data-driven with emphasis on not just defining but measuring success. It was iterative and adaptive, using constant feedback from the frontline and citizens alike. To support this, we would have to develop in-house capabilities in engineering, including more agile-like approaches. We would also need to build a curriculum for confidence and understanding of the issues of IT for mid-ranking to senior officials and ministers. We would need to take a more modular approach to creating systems that encouraged reuse. We would need to be prepared to adapt the model itself as we discovered more. Doctrine: be pragmatic. We accepted that not everything would fit into the structure or work streams that we had described. A majority would, and it was the cost reduction and improvement in those cases that would generate the most savings. However, it was important to acknowledge that a one-size-fits-all approach would not work and will be vulnerable to inertia. Pragmatism to achieve the change was more important than ideology. We also had to maintain the existing IT estate whilst acknowledging the future will require a fundamentally different approach based upon agile, open and effective local delivery. We would have to not only audit but sweat the existing assets until they could be replaced. Doctrine: a bias towards the new. We focused on an outside-in approach to innovation where change was driven and encouraged at the local level through seed funds rather than government trying to force its own concept of change through big IT. The role of central government was reduced to providing engineering expertise, an intelligent customer function to challenge what was done, industrialized component services, encouragement of change and showing what good looked like. Doctrine: listen to your ecosystems, acts as future sensing engines. We viewed the existing centralized approach as problematic because it was often remote from the real needs of either public service employees, intermediaries or citizens alike. We envisaged a new engineering group that would work in the field and spot and then nurture opportunities for change at the front line, working closely with service delivery providers. Though the bulk of the work of the Triple Helix group was completed sometime beforehand, Liam published the resultant paper Better for Less in Sept 2010. Whilst the paper is certainly not as widely known as Martha Lane Fox's letter on revolution, not evolution, it had some small impact. The ideas and concepts within the paper were circulated within government and provided some support to structures that were later created, whether spend control or the development of in-house engineering capability in government digital services or the development of training programs. I occasionally meet civil servants who have read the paper or used its concepts. I can feel comfort in knowing that the work was not in vain but helped tip the needle. But I also discovered that I had made a terrible mistake in the paper. That mistake was assumption.